Well, let's take off for Australia as we join Phil Mercer, who today we find in Queensland. Hello, Phil.
That's right, Rod. Good morning. We're in Cairns in far north Queensland. This is a beautiful part of the world, a stop-off point for the Great Barrier Reef. This is the time of year when the tourist season really does begin to pick in up here. And we've been up here for a couple of days, and there is a great vibe in Cairns. Lots of Korean tourists, Japanese, lots of British backpackers either starting or finishing their Australian adventure. And also during my time here, I've been catching up with a couple of old friends, one of which is sat opposite me. Brian Cassie is a Sydney-based, a Cairns-based photographer. He came to Australia in 1973, and he's just about to go down to Sydney, Rod, for an exhibition of his work. His work spans many, many decades. Welcome to Five Live, Brian. That's true, isn't it? Many, many years you've been snapping away.
Many, many decades sounds a bit much, but we'll go with many years.
Tell us about the exhibition down in Sydney. You were telling me earlier that this is part of the Head On Photo Festival, one of the biggest photo festivals in the world. And you've had to select 23 photos from all of the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands that you've taken. What sort of images have you selected, and how difficult has that been?
Well, it actually started off way back from when I was got my first camera at the age of 11. And
on the Isle of Wight, wasn't it?
On the Isle of Wight, yeah, in Sandown, on a beautiful Isle of Wight. I nagged my mum and dad to buy me a camera, which cost 2 and 6 in Woolworths, and that was the first camera I ever owned. And I went off and took pictures of boy things like ocean liners and steam trains, and one in particular I took of Queen Elizabeth leaving Southampton, which is still one of my favourite photographs. So it all took off from there. The love of photography and the image took off from there.
And arriving in Australia in 1973, how did your career progress from there, given that, as I well know, that you started the first Indian restaurant here in Cairns? That's quite a career change
that
for someone who was a photographer.
That was a little career change interlude, yes. It was I learnt about Indian food, obviously, in London, and Cairns was a little bit of an outpost at the time and a cultural desert, and I thought it needed an Indian restaurant, so one of the little interludes I had was opening Cairns' first Indian restaurant called Thuggy Bill's.
And how did your career as a photographer take off after the Indian food was done?
Well, it was taking off during the Indian food thing, which is a little bit awkward, actually. I was taking photographs for the local newspaper, most of their sports pictures, all of their sports pictures and various other things. And there was a time down the track in the restaurant where, well, a few years later, when I actually won the Australian Sports Photo of the Year award whilst I had the restaurant. At that point, I thought, well, I think the restaurant's got to go.
And when we think of the jobs that you've been on, the Boxing Day tsunami, coups in the South Pacific, royal visits, politics, cyclones, the Great Barrier Reef from here in Cairns. How do you choose those 23 images for your exhibition out of all of those that you've taken?
Well, luckily, it wasn't only down to me. I did have a mentor, Moshe Rosenzweig, who is actually the head of Head On Photo Festival. He went through and fine-tuned the work that I had selected. I'm very grateful to him for that as well, because I'd hate to have done it.
And which images are you most proud of?
That changes the next one, I think I'll probably have to say. You take an image, you like it, and as the years go by, that your attitude to that image changes. I think the last one in the series, it's a portrait of a local burns victim, Carol May, a very, very brave and beautiful lady. It just was selected as a finalist in the National Photographic Portrait Prize in Australia and is in the National Portrait Gallery. And that is the last, is also the last photograph in this exhibition. It's the 23rd image. It's one I'm particularly proud of.
And you fly down to Sydney tomorrow. The exhibition starts at the weekend.
Yeah.
So what do you actually do when you're down there? Do you have to explain to people who come what each image means and where it was taken in the context?
Well, I hope that with the storyboards around those 23 images, which also portray other images and text, that the story is pretty self-evident. But I do have to do an artist talk on Sunday. The actual exhibition opens 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And I will be around for a week, but the actual exhibition runs for a month, so people are on their own for the last 3 weeks.
And before I let Rod jump in, any images of Charlton Athletic in there?
There are two images of Charlton Athletic, my beloved football club, which is in a hell of a mess currently.
Brian, Rod here. Should I intrude further into private grief? Would you like to tell us about either of those images?
Would you ask that question again, please?
I will, yes. Your pictures of Charlton obviously mean a great deal to you and Phil. It sounds a bit tragedy-tinged, but can you tell us about either of the pictures that you took of the club?
Ah, the pictures, the two Charlton Athletic pictures in this exhibition were taken way, way back. I'm not going to tell you exactly when. It's a bit of a giveaway. But they are before I came to Australia, and they're just two great action shots, from one from the valley where Charlton's home, and the other one is at Leighton Orient. And they're just two of my favourite early football action shots.
When I looked at your gallery, and I looked at it online very quickly, as one will, I kind of came down on this picture of a man and his daughter at an outback station in Queensland during a drought. And he's got his arm around her, and he's leading her back into the house. And the dog is eyeing you as if, you know, you just stay where you are. Can you remember that picture, or can you remember anything about that particular?
Yeah, I do remember. I've actually visited that homestead, I think, three times over the years. That image was taken in the middle of a drought. And that image was a snap right at the very end. I'd actually taken portraits of the farmer and his daughter. But as we finished up the set, they took off and walked back to this homestead, and I just looked back and took a shot of them walking away, and that was the shot that really had feeling and really had emotion. So that was my favourite shot of the day.
Yeah, tells a story of loss, doesn't it? Had they had a terrific going over in the drought, in fact? I mean, had they lost a lot of stock?
Oh, everybody did at the time. I can't actually remember back to the exact circumstances of that shot, because I think that must have been about getting on for 20 years ago. Mm. I did visit them again, I think, about 18 months ago, and they were in a fine financial and physical shape.
Oh, good.
And the little girl is now a young woman. I think she has children.
Oh, well, that's good. That's great. When you set off to do a set of pictures, quite often, I imagine, with somebody of your name and fame, it's commissioned, but I guess not always. Sometimes you just have to go off on your own.
Not always. No, one of my favourite sets of photographs is was from about 5 or 6 years ago now. I was flicking through the internet, and I came across a reference to people living in cages in Hong Kong, and I thought, this is bizarre. So I did lots of digging, and I eventually found out that this was actually true. The poorest in Hong Kong were actually living in wire cages, and these wire cages were stacked 10, 15, 20 to a room. And I thought this was actually horrendous. I did lots of Google searches on this, and there was absolutely nothing on the internet. So I actually paid the money, took off for Hong Kong, and documented these people living in cages.
Amazing. And when you got there, what did you do? Do you just ask your local fixer, or do you?
It didn't work that way. I had to find that there was a charity in Hong Kong which were advocating for these poorest people that were living in cages. Very hard to get in touch with. I spent months trying to communicate with them and get permission for them to get me entry, and it was a very lengthy affair, but eventually they gave me several hours. You can't get into these places. They're very well guarded by landlords who don't want the media around because that's their income.
Your pictures are predominantly pictures of people. Now, can you give all us amateur photographers a lesson? Because really you have to ask permission, don't you, before you really kind of get in the face of somebody with your camera?
Yes, it's very hard not to. If somebody doesn't want their picture taken, they can stop you, and that has happened on occasions. But you do have to communicate, even without asking sometimes. It's facial expressions and how you go about what you're doing, a wink, a nod, shake of the head, whatever, you know, and you communicate that way.
And you've been out so many places, particularly in the Far East. Have you been in really fairly primitive cultures, like, I guess, Papua New Guinea, where they are deeply suspicious of you taking pictures of them?
They are, yes. It is it's a very risky country to work in, actually. They can be extremely friendly 1 minute, and the mood can turn in an instant and you find you're in trouble. I did a story, actually, in Port Moresby, the capital, a couple of years ago. It was to document the sex industry in Papua New Guinea, which is rampant. There's a startling figures that the vast numbers of the female population have at some stage either sold themselves for sex or have received gifts or something for sex. So the sex industry up there is rampant. And I spent several days in a well-known brothel up there without a camera. I left the camera in the car to try and befriend the subjects, potential subjects. And half the people there wanted to kill me, and half the people thought I was wonderful. It was a bit of a balance to be struck.
Yeah, you need to know then when to beat a speedy retreat.
Sometimes you do, yes. Yeah, and sometimes you have to talk your way out of situations rather quickly, yeah.
As a professional photographer, there are easier ways of making a living than to go to trouble spots, aren't there? And yet you've done your fair share of all that.
Yeah. You'd never catch me taking wedding pictures or babies, so, you know, it's one thing I enjoy. I've always enjoyed photojournalism, so, you know.
Right.
Even though it's not 100% of what I do.
No. What would you say is most difficult assignment that you've either been sent on or given yourself?
I was actually sent to the Asian tsunami 2004 by a British newspaper, and that would have to be the hardest assignment I've had to do. Our initial assignment was in Phuket, where the Sunday Mirror asked us to find the youngest British victim. We found myself and journalist Susie Boniface. She's a British journalist, wonderful girl. We found Patrice Fayette. He's a French national, but he was married to an English woman, and they had a six-month-old child, Ruby Rose. And when the waves came, Patrice and his wife and baby climbed a palm tree, and he watched as his wife and baby were washed away. And we found him in Phuket Hospital with little photographs and posters of details of his wife and baby. And with his permission and the permission of his family, we were allowed to follow him around as he travelled around the temple morgues in Phuket, looking for through the bodies and looking at photographs of bodies, searching for his child and his wife. His wife remains found about 3 months later, identified by DNA, but little Ruby Rose was never found, which is very sad.
Yeah. when you make a relationship like that, and you've been so close to somebody, do you find yourself getting back in touch with them?
Yes, as much as possible. If you're travelling overseas, that's not always possible.
No.
But say, for argument's sake, we had a massive cyclones in North Queensland, and Cyclone Yasi. I had the use of a helicopter, and I remember landing at one of the most devastated places, Hull Heads. Two elderly brothers who'd lost their entire home just were that devastated. They were wrapped their arms around me and crying on the shoulder, et cetera, et cetera. And I had to, you know, disentangle myself and calm them as much as I could, take a couple of photographs. And then I said to them, look, I'll be back. And I, over the months after the cyclone, I made it as much effort as I could to return as many times as I could to see how they were going. And I was actually there when they launched the rebuild of their new house.
Oh,
that's right. Just one instance.
That's a nice story. Let me hand you back to Phil.
Thank you.
I was thinking, Brian, being from Lewisham, having been in Australia for so many years, do you think you still bring that outsider's view of Australia that helps you get the images you want? You're seeing this country through slightly different eyes so that you can get a picture that perhaps other photographers who are on the same story might not get.
In all honesty, no, it's never crossed my mind, to be brutally honest. I think everybody sees things differently. Photographers in particular, if you put one photographer in front of, no, 10 photographers in front of one subject, they'd all come up with a different photograph. So I don't know. I tell you one thing I did do. I went back to England in December, and I really wanted to find the old England that I remembered, or traces of it. I couldn't find anything. The only thing I found was this beautiful old gentleman in Lewisham Market. He was your typical old barrow boy of old, with a cap, and, you know, he was wonderful. He was the one little piece of old London that I could find. There's not much left that I could recognise from those days.
What about covering royal tours here, being in Australia, especially when the royal party is crisscrossing across this vast island? It's physically, these tours are very demanding, but how is it for the press packet, the photography pack, if you like, following a royal couple like William and Kate in a country like Australia? What's that like in terms of stresses and strains on your professionalism and deadlines?
That's a very good question. I haven't done a royal tour for so long, I can't really remember, to be honest. But I know when your press packs are an awful thing, whether it's the royals or politicians or whatever, it's a thankless task. You're sort of bussed around, flown around from place to place, all plonked in the same spot. What you're getting is not particularly artistic. It's just record photography, if you like, and very challenging. So they're not one of my favourite things to do.
And at the weekend, you're on a panel, aren't you, discussing, is it fake news or the role of photography in fake news?
It's does photojournalism help in, does photojournalism take a part in fake news, or is it an essential thing to challenge fake news? It's a panel of, I think there's six of us, esteemed photographers plus me, as part of the Head On Photo Festival on Sunday evening. It should be a very interesting panel discussion. Hopefully we've got a big audience.
I was just looking at a picture here, and, you know, this could be done 100 times, but I'm looking at this. It almost looks like a converted lifeboat. It's got three red sails. And I kind of built up cockpit and a crew of three. And it's described as the Bounty Boat. It's at Restoration Island, Cape York. And it says the Bounty Boat is bound for Kupang, Timor. What was the Bounty Boat?
Now, this was a few years ago as well, actually. I'm going to have to try and remember this one. Yeah, it was a recreation of the Bounty's first voyage around this part of the world. And it part of the trip was to Restoration Island, which is an island off the tip of Cape York Peninsula. And I went up to Restoration Island because I have done stories on there. There's a beautiful old gentleman up there that lives on there as a hermit, and I've taken this photograph before. And, yeah, it was just pictures of that part of the voyage, of the recreation of the Bounty voyage around the world.
It's just a wonderful picture of a little boat on a inky black ocean with these tremendous heavy clouds coming over, and you think, well, you know, it's sunny now, but let's just wait.
yeah.
And there's a bit of a swell on as well. It's very atmospheric. I think is the thing, isn't it? You know, I work with words, obviously, not with images. But it takes longer for me to tell a story than it does for you. If you get that story right, it's right there.
That is the challenge in what we do. It's summing up a story in one photograph. It's not always possible, but that is your intent, is to get the one image that sums up the story.
Well, we're enormously happy that you've been with us. Good luck with your exhibition. And anybody who
wants to can
see Brian's stuff at his website. It's deep and wonderful. And it's Brian Cassey, Cassey. Photographer. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Phil, for introducing Brian to the rest of us.
No, thank you. And thank you, Brian, and good luck.
And thank you all.
And it's just after 2:30.
On digital, online, smartphone and tablet.